Hello and welcome to Dateline New Haven on WNHH-FM, New Haven's home for community radio. I'm Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. We got someone today who makes New Haven tick every day. Her name is Tamiko Jackson MacArthur. She's in the news because she's finishing up a four-year run as a member of New Haven's Board of Education. What are many things she does in the community? We're going to talk about that too. And we're going to see how it went and what's coming next. Tamiko, welcome to Dateline New Haven.
Thank you. It's so great to be here again. Always comfortable coming on your
great.
Show.
Great. And if you wouldn't mind getting the mic a little closer, although you are sounding great.
There you go.
Nice and clear.
There you go.
So when is your last day? December 31st?
December 31st.
You had 4 years being appointed to the Board of Ed.
Yeah.
Then new mayor came, appointed somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling about it, about leaving?
So I'm feeling good. I left a lot of policy and I left a great legacy. I feel that moving on is okay.
And Nina Silva says, great run. Thanks for listening, Nina. Let's get into some specifics, Tamiko, and then I'm going to ask you about education in general in the city where we go next. I'm also going to ask you about, in addition to your accomplishments, if you had any episodes where you kind of had second thoughts, because everybody usually does when they make tough decisions. So on your first list is an equity policy that you authored, I guess, and the board passed. What is the equity policy?
So the equity policy basically is ensuring that we are fair in all aspects of what we're doing at New Haven Board of Education. And why did we need to pass that equity policy? Just because some people don't get it. And some people need to read it. Some people need to see it in black and white. Equity on all levels, basically.
So like, what does the policy say? What does it have to do?
It talks about equity within the ranks of the Board of Ed and within the school system. I can't specifically bring the whole policy.
Is it
right
like
now.
A guideline? Like we want you to try and make sure racial or
yeah.
other kinds of equity? What kind
yes,
of
yes.
people in different positions?
Yes.
Like you have enough principals who have racial diversity, that kind
yes,
of thing?
Yes, yes.
Now, you know, one question always in society is mm-hmm. that when you want to have a more just society, there's no question that when you hold decision making, you try to have rules to make it happen. And
mm-hmm.
it's better to have those rules than not have those rules.
Mm-hmm.
How much, I'm thinking this more like if you're the Supreme Court or the U.S. Congress or you run a big Fortune 500 company. How much can rules do it, and how much is up to us one-on-one as human beings? I know it's not either or, to change what's in our hearts. Like, there have been studies that diversity workshops in corporations actually do not lead to white people treating people of color better in the company. But
mm-hmm.
if they have friends who aren't exactly like them, or if they've worked with somebody and they've come to see them as more of a human being, that makes more of an impact. What do you think about that? And that's not at all to say, as a Board of Education member, you shouldn't try to address these issues. I'm just wondering mm-hmm. how we get there as a society.
So you make the policies and you need the people in order to enact the policies and hit the ground running. There are always going to be folks that are not going to agree and probably do things that kind of don't align with what that policy says. And
mm-hmm.
we see that all the time. So my thing with whenever we brought a policy forward, the next step was implementation and changing, making sure people and their thoughts and their actions align. It could all go out the window if you don't have folks that are on the front line doing the work, applying that to their actions. So we need the people to take those policies and put them in their
actions. And then
on
the other hand, it's also pointed out that if you don't have the policies, you're not making clear what your expectations are. Policies are a statement
yes.
of what an organization believes so that people can know
yes,
what's expected.
Exactly. And I would say the opt-out policy, support policy that was passed at the last meeting, that goes straight to that point, Paul. We have a certain population of families that opt out of standardized testing. And
I would just like to get rid of standardized testing myself.
Could we please?
Yeah,
could we
anyway,
please?
So tell me about this policy.
So basically, what it does is it gives that statement and the guidance to the building leaders on how to incorporate those children into the standardized testing actions on those days.
In other words, like it's pretty big time now, because in addition to twice a year, is it that they take their test, and then there are weeks beforehand where they prepare.
Right. So what do you do with those families? Now, we've had incidents where the the buildings have asked the people to stay home and the kids got absences, or the children were not treated with the same respect because their families opt. Now the kids aren't opting out. Their parents are opting them out. So they're just going to school normally and saying, well, why am I being treated differently?
How widespread is it that the parents opt them out?
Not too widespread. People don't understand that movement or why folks opt out, because it is a movement.
Sterenized tests is one of my big racial surprise lessons in covering politics in New Haven. There was a race in late 90s. James Newton, who was black, was running against John Stefano, who was white.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of white middle-class people like myself are very much against standardized tests. We feel it doesn't teach the kids to think, that it gets them to learn to a test, that puts all the stupid pressure, and it's not a real accurate way of judging people. So Jim Newton was running, the African-American candidate, pushing more standardized tests and more training to help the kids do well on them. And it was this cultural moment for me. I said, well, you know, Jim, because at that time, the parents that were really rising up against it were like in Scarsdale, wealthy white areas.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just, and then Mount Vernon in the low-income black area, parents were signing up their kids on Saturday morning to wait hours to have extra test prep. And what Newton told me, and he said to me, look, for someone where you come from, you're privileged. Your kids are going to do okay anyway. You got privileges in society because of racism and other economic disparities. Your kid's going to be okay whether or not they take a standardized test. And they're going to do well on the test because that test is geared to them. Our kids, as he put it, already have strikes against them. So yeah, it's not a fair world with these standardized tests. But given that that world exists, we need help to do better on them so that we can get our bite at the apple. That was Jim's argument.
I disagree with that on some aspects, because first and foremost, the money attached to those standardized tests, now there's a millions of dollars that's dangled. And mm-hmm. So when you dangle them to a district like New Haven that's already underfunded, New Haven's going to be a district to say, look, we need to make sure that we keep those 95% of kids taking this test so we can get the money.
Tell me about that. What is that?
So basically, there's money attached to the test. The state pays you money for your kids to take these tests.
How? Like, what is it that you get a punishment? Like, you don't get certain funds?
Millions of dollars.
Like, what are those funds?
It's money. You get money to put into your classrooms. Right?
Is that general education aid that's tied to it, or what kind of aid is it?
It's not money that's earmarked for classrooms, right? So mm-hmm. It goes into the classrooms, direct money.
And some of that is tied to if you get a 95% rate of people taking the test.
Right. So if you don't, then you're at risk of losing that money. So think about this. So districts that really don't care about the money, they just continue to teach kids great stuff, and not that we're not, but they teach differently. So when the test comes, they're like, who cares, just take the test, you know, you could take it or you could leave it.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it's a matter of getting dollars that we desperately need to go into the classrooms. So our kids take the test, we may not do so well, so then the powers that be can say, wow, your district is failing. Yeah, but what if they go into the classrooms and they gauge these kids on their classroom portfolio of work?
What if you let the teachers teach them to be thinkers?
Exactly. So they take these tests, Paul. How do these tests help them where they are? How do these tests help them later on in life? So the statement, we go back to the statement that you were talking about. They're not learning the way they should be. So you're agreeing about this.
So what do you do then as a Board of Education member where you don't control what the state does? So you want to make sure you get your budget. But you also care about the kids. You're a parent of kids. You're a pediatrician. Your kids are in the school system. What do you do then? What are your levers to try to make that better? I guess one thing you did was an opt-out policy to support parents who don't want to send their kids through that.
Yeah. So that's the first step. And something bigger, like the district standing up to these standardized tests, that would take a whole movement that the administration's not ready for that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
how would that happen? Saying we're going to, okay, fine us, we'll sue you on it?
Yeah. I mean, I would think that. I mean, I don't know, because we haven't gotten there yet and I couldn't say specifically, but right now, when I was talking about the policy before I passed it, the superintendent spoke up during that time to say that, you know, the state is not for opting out. And it wasn't even an opt-out policy, which is talking about supporting families that opt out. So,
and what percentage opt out?
Oh, very low. And honestly, Paul, I've asked for it for over a year and they won't give it to me. Mm-hmm.
So is it fair to say, there we go, here you are, board of ed parent, pediatrician, member of the board of education, you're concerned about what you think are the perverse incentives in the way we run standardized tests and tie money to it. Yep. You cannot stop the state from what they're doing. You alone cannot make New Haven take a stand on it, though you're arguing, I believe, that we should. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, what you could do is to support the parents.
Yes.
By having a policy.
Yes, and but what it also has done, which I think one of the fears was, now parents are saying, I can opt out. I can, my kids don't have to do that. And no, they don't. So a lot of my students, the students that come through my office, you know, especially kids who have dyslexia or processing issues, those types of tests are detrimental to them. You know, it doesn't really help them at all. It brings a lot of anxiety. You know, I tell parents, well, you know what? Your kid goes to public school. You don't have to deal with that. You don't have to deal with that at all.
Look to them there. And, you know, we start.
Here's the letter you give. And I give them the letter.
We start a little. Oh, okay. You get what kind of letter you get?
I have a form letter that talks about, you know, I don't have to take this. My kids don't have to take this test. And I'm officially opting my child out of.
So do they need that not to take the test?
They should give it. They should give it. And it talks about, you know, my kids can take all tests that the teacher creates, the teacher grades, and the teacher gives the feedback on.
Mm-hmm. And so, tell me about that. Why is that important?
Because then we know, first and foremost, it's accurate to where they what the class is learning at that time. Mm-hmm. And your child is applying themselves on that subject matter, and they're getting tested on that.
And are you hoping to go beyond your board of ed now that you're finishing up dealing with this issue at all in any other capacity?
You mean around opting out?
Or just the whole standardized testing issue?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What are you going to do?
I've actually sat on panels around standardized testing and talking about how detrimental they are for most kids. However, you know, I'm not going anywhere. My kids are still in the public schools and they are still opted out as they have been since.
Oh, they have been.
They've been opted out since they stepped foot into the public schools and they started at pre-K 4. Mm-hmm. So I was giving that letter, although they didn't start those tests till a little bit later, but that test has been.
So as a parent, as a pediatrician, as a person speaking out, you're going to continue to raise this issue.
Oh, yes.
And we're talking to Tomiko Jackson MacArthur, Board of Ed member, finishing up a four-year run. Because we started a little late, we're not going to get to everything. Let me read the list, see if I'll go deep on anything else. She did a lot on her 4 years. She was behind a restorative practices policy that isn't just a statement of wishing. We actually stopped suspending and expelling most students we used to, and we've gone from the biggest outlier in the state to one of the best leaders in keeping kids in the school if they cause trouble and help them solve it with the community. Procurement policy for vendors, a gender-affirming policy, Columbus School name change, restructuring how school resource officers, that's cops in the school work. And I think that's, and leading, investigating racist behavior at district administrator, those are some of your highlights. Let me ask you, in addition to all the accomplishments, did you look back and see anything that you said, I learned from that, I would have done it differently going back?
Yeah, I think that the Board of Education is very, while you're very focused, it's very emotionally draining.
Yeah.
And it can tap emotions that you really don't use every day because you're dealing with children and you see people doing things that you feel aren't in the best interest of the whole, and it taps into that fire. Mm-hmm. I think that there have been times when I could have been a little bit more level-headed, but I don't regret it. Mm-hmm. I have no regrets.
But I mean, what, any advice for the next people coming on from what you've learned with that? How do you that?
I think my advice would be, you know, to try and leave the outside influence and political influences off the table, out of the room. I feel that our kids suffer the most, in decision making, in the decisions that we make when they're strictly political. Mm-hmm. Because they're not, that has nothing to do with.
What would be an example of a strictly political decision? The dealing with the principal or who used the N-word?
I think the biggest thing was the fight with the schools around the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that the fight was so politically driven that we weren't worried about the right things. We should have been worried about how are we going to effectively virtually educate these kids, and how are we going to effectively keep them grounded, keep them involved, keep them engaged. The fight was the wrong. I feel like that was the wrong fight, because it was the right decision to keep the schools closed because we were not ready. We found out after the fact about all those filters and, mm-hmm. you know, the classrooms weren't ready. It was just not the time. What we should have focused on really hard was engaging a really good virtual platform that was a lot better than the one that we used, because there are better ones out there. And also in continuing to build that and reinforce the virtual and digital learning. That's not a focus right now. I think that we could use it in a lot of situations that are actually not even, that don't even have anything to do with the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the ideas of coming out of the pandemic with new ways we're going to live and work.
Right, but we're not. So we have kids that are home that aren't sick enough to be on screen or to be virtually educated. Like kids, mm-hmm. I know a kid that was home for like 6 weeks, non-weight bearing, had a surgery. Mm-hmm. And right now, what they get is like 2 hours a day.
Mm.
We could educate those kids alongside their colleagues. But I think there are union issues with the teachers. There are people that don't really believe in that. And I think that's a big crock. I think we need to fix that.
All right. Tamiko Jackson MacArthur, we've been seeing your face around town.
I heard.
You're a pediatrician, you're a public figure, and you're trying to urge people to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Why'd you do that?
Because COVID-19 is a predator, and it's killing people, and it's making people have long-term illnesses after getting after contracting COVID. You know, we've seen people getting lung transplants, kids having to stay home because of the Miss C. It's you can prevent that with a vaccine. Now that we can go down to 5 years of age, I am encouraging everyone to get the vaccine. For anyone over five, it's the science is there. It's safe. So I do my part.
All right. Well, thank you for doing your part. Thanks for doing your part helping keep people safe with public health. Thanks for doing your part for 4 years devoting endless hours that almost none of us would be willing to devote. I mean it. There's no way I would sit on a board of commission where people yell at each other and having long presentations, the stuff matters. But I wouldn't deal with that. All those hours every week. You did it. You did it unpaid. You did it because you care about your community, about families, and about our public education system. Thank you, and everyone else on the board, Ed, who puts that time in.
Yeah.
You did your 4 years. You're moving on. What's next for Tamiko?
You know, I'm working on I have a nonprofit called Virginia's Heart, named after my mother, that's focusing on women with children who are in crisis. And my goal is short and long-term housing. So that paperwork came through over the last 6 months. I've been working on that. So
short and long-term housing for women who...
Women in crisis who have children. So, you know, someone who's evicted or has to leave because of domestic violence, you know, all those wraparound services, as well as short and long-term housing. So
you're still going to be busy. You're doing good stuff.
Yeah, man.
And I'm glad that you took a little time out to visit us here at Dateline New Haven again. We love having you on.
Yeah, I'm sorry I was late, but we're busy right now.
Better late than never.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for joining us today, Tamiko Jackson MacArthur. Wish you so much luck with Virginia's Heart. We're going to invite you back to talk about that.
Yeah, I want to.
Around. I think that sounds like a wonderful thing. And thanks, everybody else, for joining and commenting and everything else. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass inviting you to fly free with us every day, every night at WNHH New Haven's home for community radio.
Charter Oak Boxing Academy. The last year and a half, we've been able to run at almost full capacity because we've employed all of the governor's mitigation standards for COVID. Now we're all back.